We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia where this podcast was recorded, as the first storytellers, the first communities, and the first creators of Australian culture. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hi there, I'm Daniel Moore, and you're listening to Season 4 of the Hearing Architecture Podcast, proudly sponsored by Brickworks. In this episode, I'm speaking with Dr. Voldemar Janek, who isn't a registered architect, but is an architectural academic specialising in advanced architectural technology at the Queensland University of Technology. Dr. Voldemar Janek is an experienced researcher and educator, specialising in the intersection of education, technology and architecture. With a strong focus on computational technologies and their impact on architectural design, his research explores immersive environments, interactive computer graphics and parametric design, connecting the digital and physical worlds. He is passionate about integrating immersive technologies into education and leveraging his expertise in software design, augmented, virtual, and mixed reality. Let's jump in. All right, Voldemar Janek, thank you so much for joining me today on the Hearing Architecture Podcast. How are you going?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
It's great. Thank you so much for joining us all the way from Queensland. Thank you so much for joining us and for talking about a subject that I think a lot of people are very interested in at the moment. It's sort of an area where a lot of practices are considering what's happening in the digital space, what's happening with artificial intelligence, because you're really a massive expert in this field and you're doing some incredible architecture work across very different planes, I guess, you know, because there's many different areas where this can be used. Do you want to tell our audience a little bit more about your, like, I guess, the really specialized area that you're an expert in when it comes to artificial intelligence and sort of augmented reality and all of these emerging technologies?
So I started to study architecture like quite a while ago, and then I did a master's degree in architecture as well. And I was working with Graphisoft for quite some time now. And I was always interested in the intersection between education, software and technology and architecture. So I'm not an architect and I will never be one. I will not design houses. That's not my cup of tea. But I was always very architectural in the work I've been doing. So when I started to engage with also other software companies like Epic Games and Vectorworks and be in that space in, oh, this is the new feature. And I'm really interested. This is making our lives easier when we use this tools, right? So I ended up doing a PhD at QUT, particular in that space, looking into immersive technologies and how we can teach students utilizing these technologies for their designs and also designing media architecture structures or smart architecture, if you want to call it so, because that's what's going to happen in the future, right? That we are having more smart homes, smart cities, and not everybody wants that, but it's still making our lives easier in some instances. So that's what I've always been interested in. That's what I've been researching in the past couple of years here in Australia.
Yeah, fantastic. So I guess when you mentioned like working with Graphisoft, I believe that means you're working with ArchiCAD. Right. And so I guess there's a lot of people, a lot of firms who are switching over to some form of BIM, which they might associate with ArchiCAD and Revit. But I believe you're working with other software platforms that are sort of taking things a little bit further than that. Did you want to talk a little bit about what software you are working with, which I guess is an amazing additional tool to traditional BIM platforms like ArchiCAD and Revit?
So in my research, what I've been working with quite a bit is also Twinmotion, which is a real-time architectural visualization software coming from Epic Games. And it allows you to create an immersive experience with a one-click solution. And that's quite nice if you don't want to go and step into Unreal Engine, which can be quite complicated, right? They are making movies basically with that software. So there's a lot of different settings And for architecture purposes, it's basically too much. So Twinmotion is like a reduced version to come up with a photorealistic version, but I don't have the control of, I don't know, if I want to make the new Star Wars movie, then that's something I can't do in Twinmotion, which is fine because as an architect or in that space, you don't need that. I've been also working or testing out now reality capture or capture reality. One of them is the company and one of them is the software. I always mix them up with digital twins, right? So playing around, scanning the environment and putting it into the software. And I think what's quite interesting with digital twins is that a lot of people are talking about BIM and companies or projects like the Cross Railway project in Brisbane, they are implementing digital twin methods and also BIM methods into their daily practice. But what would be interesting to see is how are we using these methods or the model itself after we finish the projects, so that there's a model which is aging with the real project as well. And that's where there's a huge potential, because with bringing in AI technology can really help to maintain the architecture sectors, but also learn about the usage of the architecture itself.
Okay. So I guess, yeah, Twinmotion, my understanding is that a great platform for rendering. Is that one of its main uses?
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So what about some of these other software that we hear about that some firms are exploring, like Stable, Diffuser, Blender, those sorts of things? Have you started to work in those spaces to see how they can be implemented in architecture firms?
With Blender, Stable, Diffusion, I also tested out some things. And so basically what I can do is I take my ARCHICAD model or Revit model and put it into Stable Diffusion and then type in a prompt, as I've known maybe from other language models, to come up with a visual output, right? So
when you say like a visual output, what does that mean?
It means that it will understand the geometry of my model, right? Mm-hmm. And if I say make it, I don't know, like a residential house in a lake in Austria area, mountains, whatever, something like this. So it will come up with a rendering which looks like this, right? So the question is also for the future, if I study architecture and I learn how to use rendering software, well, do I need these skills anymore, right? Because it's now so easy that to come up with just a simple prompt and describing it. I mean, there's this trend now of prompt engineering so that you get the results you really want to have, right? But now also with Adobe releasing Firefly, which is their AI tool for generating pictures with prompts as well for commercial purposes, right? So now it's available for everybody if you have an Adobe account. Then I think there's a limitation of how many pictures you can generate with one account, but that's just crazy how good it also looks like. Because in the past, I tested some online tools and they were like, maybe, maybe not. There's still some work to do, but it's very interesting that things we have worked on like for hours in the past, or for people who studied architecture and design in the past in Photoshop, to come up with the really high end hero image of your architecture is now just done in seconds. If you're able to engineer your prompt correct, then all right, this is going to allow you to focus on other things much more.
Yeah, right. So I guess, are we already at the point where you could even type in or describe your site and say, you know, this site will be on Nicholson Street in Melbourne, in summer at 6 a.m. Can you do that sort of stuff yet? Or do you think that's something that will come down the path where it gets some information maybe from Google Street View and information like that?
Don't think we are there yet that I can capture, but sooner or later, this is going to happen, right? So the whole idea of being an architect will change. The whole idea of how we study architecture in universities has to change, because question is there, how is the business of education running in the future? How can we claim, or can a university ask for study fees when much of the work is done by an AI, right? So when I teach at UQ and QUT, I also teach in Germany, I foster my students, or I tell them you should use AI technologies and explore them. But you need to learn how to use them as a critical tool, because you want to make sure that when you go onto the job market, that you bring value to the company, right? And if you are just making a prompt, then they don't need you. There should be a reason why they will want to hire you, because you are great and you're bringing something new into the company.
Mm, absolutely. Well, I mean, my understanding of a company that you work with, Epic Games, I would have assumed that they wanted people who specialized in computer graphics. I believe that your architectural background and amazing knowledge in this sort of interactive software, that you're now part of that team to help with interactive experiences. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience working with Epic Games? And then, yeah, maybe we can sort of talk about how that's going to then influence the regular architecture space, maybe.
So I'm part of the beta testing team for Twinmotion and for Reality Scan, which is the simplified version for your phone from Reality Capture. So I'm technically not working for Epic Games, but I get access to earlier versions of the software. So if you want to call that work, then yes. It's more, again, the fun part of it, too, that I have access to things and I also have impact on solutions which might come in the future, right? Because you can imagine that people are requesting things which maybe do not make sense. And with Twinmotion in particular, there's a balance between what they should implement and what they shouldn't, because you don't want to make a Unreal Engine 2.0, right? You don't want to have a new version of the same product.
Yeah.
So they are very picky in terms of, okay, this is something we're going to implement because it's not overcomplicating things, right? Or is this a nice to have? And because there is the option always to use a DataSmith connection between all of these software. So I can go from Archicad, Revit, or whatever CAD software to Twinmotion, and then I can go further to Unreal Engine in case I want to create something different. So it's, if I want to make another science fiction movie, I could start with a CAD model in my CAD software and then go to Twinmotion and then go to Unreal Engine. And usually, I mean, I'm not making movies, but that's my workflow as well. Like, I would start modeling in my CAD software because I'm most familiar with it in terms of modeling, and then I would make changes to the visuals in Twinmotion because it's just very easy and quick to come up with solutions there. And if I feel I want to have some kind of interactivity which I can't reach in Twinmotion because there are some strict boundaries there or limitations, then I could go to Unreal Engine and test other kind of interactivity. In Unreal Engine, basically, my potential is limitless. I can do whatever I want if I know how to do it.
Right. So I guess that's something that architects are kind of scared of, but also excited by, the idea that if you can think it, there are new ways of producing it. So can you talk us through that a little bit more? So if, how are things now changing for the better compared to where, you know, I guess back in the day, everything had to come out via hand drawing. Then we could explore a little bit more where people were using Grasshopper and software that could sort of do a lot of iterative designs, so you could explore and see what was possible with surfaces and textures. And how is AI starting to make that process even easier or faster?
I think in terms of design options, that's something which AI allows us to make things much more cohesive and interesting and better and also quicker in terms of coming to a solution. I remember I attended a talk from somebody from Europe where they were using AI technology for urban development and urban design. So what they wanted to achieve, they had a site in, I think it was a city in Australia, where they wanted to achieve that all the rooms would have the most sunlight they can get, something like this. So that was the brief, right? And then they would run overnight an AI engineered model and it would test all different shapes of the building to see, okay, if we do this, I have this kind of sunlight in my building. If I do this, so it would run overnight and test all these kind of things. So rather than the architect or the urban designer sitting there and just modeling everything in their CAD software by themselves to test if there's to do the sun studies, they would run a system and then they would come up with a shape at the end of the day and would say, okay, we should put our rooms or the functions of our building into this kind of shape because that's the best we can get out of it in terms of the sun. And that's quite interesting because, again, if you go back to the day, that's something would could have taken ages and you would maybe have options between, I don't know, 3 or 10 if you really want to like make sure that you get the result you want, but you wouldn't go further because otherwise you spend a lot of time in designing something which will never be built. So the AI takes a lot of the work in making this kind of decision. But the question is, do we want that, right? Because the whole part of being an architect or a designer is that I am the creative part of it. So I kind of give this away a little bit to the AI. And again, it's really important to be critical of these things because otherwise we don't know what we end up with if we just trust these technologies without being critical.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of firms are playing with at the moment to see how they can use AI as a really valuable tool, but not to the point where we can't, take the pleasure in designing our buildings, in the process that we've been taught and been using along the way before AI became more accessible. Have there been ways where people have set up structures where they have sort of put a successful line in the sand between the designs that they've made and then what parts of AI they use so that then, that their hand in the design is still present there?
I can't think of an example here, but even that, saying that, let's go to some of the architects which are quite unique in what kind of work they do. If you look at Zaha Hadid, right, there's a certain style within the architecture coming from her artwork and from her team, still from the people working for that studio in the UK. You would mimic that style, right? Or the AI would mimic the style. So I don't think we would know if this is coming up or not, right? Or if you look at Geary's work in Sydney or in Germany, there's a certain, if you have a little bit of an understanding of how Geary's buildings work and how his design process is, I think the AI can mimic that, right? Because with Geary, from what I remember when I studied, he really makes sure that he will figure out the internal system of his architecture before he will put around the facade, right? So he really want to make sure that all the rooms are working in terms of light and access. Mm. And then he puts up these crazy, sometimes crazy shapes around the building, right? So, and I guess with online tools, even I remember I came across like a floor plan maker. So you would just do the outline of the shape from the building or apartment you want to have, and it would give you, would try to always give you the best result so that you have the most usable space in your living room or a big kitchen and stuff like this, right? So, and you just increase the floor plan footprint or decrease it, and it will just come up with, because it can access like millions of floor plans before. So they are not necessarily all of them not going to be good, right? That's for sure. Yeah. But you will get many different options in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, great. Okay. And so for firms who haven't touched AI yet, what do you think are some of the software platforms that architects could use and that are, easy to use and accessible, where they can start to experiment with them and see some of the benefits for their design process?
I think Blender with Stable Diffusion is the go-to for somebody who wants to explore, because Blender itself is the software product I'm not sure how it really works, but it's for free because it's community run or based, right? So it's not a big software company who goes around it and they are trying to get new clients and customers. So, I mean, there's still some business model behind it, but I, even for commercial purposes, you could use it for free. So you don't have this big investment beforehand. I think there's, you will be, if you make a certain amount of time, money after a while, I think there's some kind of royalty you have to pay. Mm-hmm. But for like testing purposes and setting up the Stable Diffusion plugin for Blender is also quite easy. So if you have a little bit of an understanding, most likely it should be the person who's like responsible for software in the company. But there are many different videos online which will give you guidance in to just do the testing, right? So taking an old model from what the studio has designed in the past and then getting it into Blender and type in the prompt and see what I can get out of it, right? If you want to have a steampunk version of that architecture building, you could have that quite easily.
Yeah, nice. Okay. Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities to play with AI as well, which is really exciting. That sometimes the time it took to just play traditionally, where you know you had to spend hours sometimes drawing things out and getting that feedback loop. Now you can plug in a few different parameters, and like you say, after you've created one image, you might be able to say, okay, yeah, let me see what this would look like if it was steampunk or Art Deco or Bauhaus. And so I guess, yeah, it seems like it's a really interactive, it can be a really interactive process working with AI, and it gives you a lot of feedback and sort of data set information. What do you think are the benefits of using AI in the process really early on? Do you think it's better to use AI or explore AI in any kind of architecture process early in the process, or is it something that maybe leans towards a little bit of the later side of the process where maybe people who are doing documentation might not have to spend as many hours working in that space later down the track?
I don't think I have an answer to that question. And I do think nobody has, because we are still in the time of exploring, right? So sometimes it can be good if there's, to use it very much at the beginning to help understand certain aspects of the design brief, I want to say. But as I mentioned before, I believe that if I just type in the brief and it will come up with something, then it takes away my agency of my work and my design work, right? If I just do that. So thinking about how I can use this as a tool again. So I would say if at the beginning, I would use it to understand the design brief more, however that looked like, right? So I remember when ChatGPT came out at the beginning, I was testing if it would be able to create a tutorial for a grasshopper, rhino grasshopper parametric design tower, right? Just to see if it gives me the different steps, right? So, and it would come up with a tutorial and it sounded all right, but if you would have a little bit of knowledge how rhino grasshopper works, then you would know, no, this doesn't exist. Like it could be, right? But at the moment, that's not the way how you would do it, right? Mm. So there's this thing, we need to be careful because we never know if these softwares also, I don't want to say lying, but it's also making stuff up, right? So if it doesn't have any kind of information, it will make stuff up, and then you run into legal issues as well. If you have done decisions based on things which are simply not true, then this might be tricky at the end when you're saying, oh yeah, no, we can't actually build this here because our AI at the beginning was thinking that there is something happening on the site which is actually not true.
That's a kind of frightening thought at the moment, isn't it, where some people think that they can rely on things like chat GPT or Google Bard to give them all the answers to some of the questions that are coming across their desk. So, yeah, good to keep that in the back pocket. So I guess there are definitely some groups who are starting to look at the sort of immersive and interactive side of these new technologies. You mentioned to me before a project where up in Queensland, the Ross River Rail, where they've been using some immersive technologies and interactive technology. Do you want to talk a little bit more about, or tell us a bit about that project and how they used some of these new technologies in their project?
So it's the Cross River Rail project.
Okay. So I'll work on my note-taking capabilities now. So the Cross River Rail project, yes. in Queensland. All right. So you mentioned the Cross River Rail project before up in Queensland. Did you want to tell us a little bit about how they implemented interactive or immersive technologies in that particular project?
So as part of my teaching at QUT, we had a unit, augmented interaction, and we visited the Cross River Rail Experience Center, which is a public center where people can go and learn about the project, right? So we went with our students a couple of times now there, and they are using immersive technologies. So they have VR headsets to allow people to experience what the work looks like, also what the final design should look like different kind of things. How is it to be one of the people who are riding or driving the train underground, right? And they also have, when we talk about immersive technologies, then usually it's a VR headsets, or I use my iPad or Android tablet for like an augmented reality.
So this is where like you hold up iPad and you're looking at the screen of the iPad, and there's additional information coming into the image that the camera is capturing.
Okay, yes. Great. So with that experience center, what I quite like is they also have a projection room, right? So it's, I don't have a device on me. It's just that on the walls and on the floor, I believe, there will be projections. So I feel like I will be inside the train based on the projection. So it's a different kind of being immersed into the experience rather than having like a device around your head, right? So and what they do is they are really, really looking into the digital twin aspect of it, right? Because Queensland government is obviously spending quite a lot of money on making this connection. I think it also goes up. At the end, they want to have a train going from the Sunshine Coast to the Gold Coast, which is one train. So I don't have to like interchange in these kind of things, but also reducing the amount of cars within the city so that people are using more public transport. And there's a lot of things happening around the Wollongabba Stadium. So again, going back to the digital twin, that's the aspect I wanted to talk about. Mm. They are really implementing things that they can use the digital twin in the future, even if the project is finished, so that the facility manager of whatever part they are taking care of has access to that data and can use it for making decisions.
Mm. Okay, great. So, I mean, I guess for people who aren't working in this space as much as others, do you want to explain a little bit about what digital twin is? Because I think we're in a lot of the space where people are using technology all the time, we say digital twin without even thinking about it. Yeah, let us know exactly like what is digital, what is twin, what's going on in that space.
So with Archicad or Revit or CAD software, when they talk of about the building information model and building information modeling, so we would create a 3D model of our building, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the first step. But with building information modeling, there is more information within my 3D model, right? Because I can do anything in SketchUp and my building doesn't know really what it is, right? So in Archicad or Revit, I can give more information to the different kind of objects. So if I have a wall, the wall does know what it's made of, right? It does know how long does it take if in case of a fire, if this is burning down, how long these kind of things like fire there's a term for that in English. I forgot what it is, like the fire rating, I think, something like this.
That's right.
So my window does know that it's a window, right, on opening, like these kind of things. It does have more information in terms of the physics. So temperature going through the outside to the inside, these kind of things are included in my building information modeling. So the digital twin should be, it's modeled in a way that it's representing the real environment and also the real building, because we all know what's happening usually. It's happening definitely that you will design something as a building information modeling, right? A model, and then things will change on site. Maybe the structural engineer needs to make some changes, all these kind of things. There are changes to our model. So really making sure that our digital twin reflects what we intended to do, but also reflects the reality, because that's important, reflecting the reality as well. Because if I have a 3D model, the building information model, and it doesn't reflect the reality, then it becomes useless for my facility manager or whoever is maintaining the building at the end of the day. So going back to the Cross River Vale projects, to give you an example, how could this be beneficial? So let's assume there's some kind of ventilator within the subway station, and every 10 years the company says they are breaking down because they're too old, something something. So then if you connect this to an AI system, you could be warned, I don't know, 8 years after you have installed this ventilator. So it will be saying, hey, maybe this Christmas when things are shutting down, we will already change this and put in a new one rather than waiting until it's broken, right? So because if it's broken, it will disrupt the whole traffic area for quite some time. But if you are able to predict these kind of things, that something needs to be replaced in the future or very soon, then you could do it in advance. And at the end of the day, it will help the person who is maintaining the structure, or in this case, the Cross River Rail station. So things wouldn't be disturbed too much anymore after this. So I think, I believe that connecting the digital twin data and an AI model with this kind of information, right? Because we don't need to connect it to an open AI language model like ChatGPT. We would have like a closed system. So I could be saying, okay, I make my own AI here, and put all the information which is relevant for me into this language model, and then I can have a conversation with it, because I would ask specifically questions. And rather than me going through all the documents to have an understanding what is the maintaining time of certain aspects of this product, I could just ask my little helper and it will give me the information. It also helps me to make sure that I only get the relevant information, right? Because if I have an open system and everybody can put in information, then it might change to something which is not so helpful anymore, because I make decisions based on something which is maybe not right for me.
Wow. Okay. So it can actually give you feedback, like information that you feed into this project from a very early stage. That can be this ongoing reference.
Yes.
For the life of the building, once the architects have actually finished up and the construction workers have finished up. The model is actually a reference for anyone who's working on this building or on this project, like the Cross River Rail, into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, how, I guess, does this work when we're talking about technology and future-proofing, that, you know, this sort of technology? How would this work in terms of maintaining the legibility and readability of these documents, I guess, as file formats change over time? And you know, resources and servers and all these things are getting updated. How easy is that to manage, so that then this resource actually can be read and accessed ongoing?
So usually the way it works is that with your CAD software, you would export things as an IFC file. Because the whole idea about the IFC file is that it will be able to be read by an IFC reader in the future, and regardless of the software, right? So in building information modeling and open BIM, the way it works, that my structural engineer and my MEP, they are working all, and I am as an architect, we work all in different softwares and we put them together into the BIM cloud, whatever my software solution is there. So we can check for any kind of issues. There are some kind of overlapping things which shouldn't be overlapping. I could do that in my cloud system and check the different kind of models. So we are, if IFC is progressing the way it is, right, or the intention behind it, that's the go-to that I am able to read it in the future without having any kind of specific software. And I think what's quite interesting here would be how we can archive these kind of information. Because at the moment, if you go to the state library or to any kind of library which is storing architectural drawings, they have drawings, right? So there's a floor plan, there will be sections, there will be maybe perspectives drawn, but it's something I can read without any kind of technology, right? And that's the benefit. And that's why the libraries are keeping them even from buildings long time ago. So how could we make this or use this that we can archive this information that also future generations have an understanding of what's actually what was happening in this kind of building? And then if I would have this connected to a language-based AI model, rather than reading things in a document, I could ask questions and get the answers straight away, right? So that's quite interesting, combining all these kind of things into archiving information of buildings who might not exist anymore or in the future maybe will be demolished or broken down. Fires are happening as well, right? So these kind of things, disasters, to still have access to that digital twin.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, it's fascinating to think about the digital twin idea, and then also I guess the interactive side of the model itself, but then also if people are walking around with AR or immersive technology that you're talking about. When we're thinking about the sort of digital model, where when I'm sitting at my laptop and navigating around a digital model, being accessible from home, and then also what's accessible from actually being on the site, is this something where that needs to have some sort of connectivity between GPS does that sort of technology rely on QR codes? And when you're pointing your iPad or your AR goggles at something on the actual site, it can either interact with an existing model that's offsite somewhere, or that it can pick up a reference like a QR code and tell you more information about it.
There's an interesting company called Fologram. These are guys from Melbourne, I think also Melbourne University. And what they do is a lot of parametric design stuff where each of the individual objects they're creating, let's say they make a facade, so each of the different panels will be slightly different, but to the human eye, they might be very, very similar. So for us, it will be really, really hard to understand, oh, is this panel number 3 or is this panel number 4, right? Mm-hmm. So because they are so similar to, but they are creating a wave, for example, in the facade. So they are using the Microsoft HoloLens last time I saw them, where the HoloLens is tracking the shape of the different panels.
Oh, wow.
And then it would give the person who's wearing the headset instructions in how to assemble things, right? So even a person who doesn't have a trades background would be able to do these kind of things. And they're doing a lot of research out there in this kind of space. And it's just crazy. I think they are crazy in terms of what kind of things they are doing with their software engineering knowledge. And they're also having a Fologram app where you can test these kind of things, or you would have a live connection to your Rhino model, for example, so that if you make changes in your Rhino model on your computer, you would also see it in augmented reality, if I remember correctly, on your phone, and could place it somewhere else. So it's very interesting in this kind of thing. But I guess the issue in terms of implementing this is that architecture traditionally has been very slow in adapting to technology, because usually I do have a project, big project, it's running, and I will not switch my software in between. The project hasn't finished yet, right? So it's Even going from a different version from your CAD software, from ARCHICAD 23 to 24, right? If it's a project, I don't know, an airport or something really big, sometimes they take years, and it would mean I would stick to the software because it comes with issues in readability, with the IFC export, all these kind of things. So I personally do not believe that AI will take away a lot of the architect's work. I believe that the way we work as architects or designers, it will change. But in architecture, in the building industry, construction industry, because there are so many different factors and so many different people who are working on some particular project, that it will take longer than for other industries, right? So if you go to game design can change like this. Like if there's a new product which is changing or making things so much easier, it will be adapting much, much more quicker than the architecture industry.
Yeah, it's one of those wonderful things, I guess, in the digital space where some updates, I guess there are probably some huge leaps which might take still a lot of time in the transfer between certain technologies to others. But because it's not dependent on the real world applications that that architecture has, there are great benefits to that. Have you heard much about the when you're talking about, I guess, these fundamental problems in the architecture space with technology, when it comes to interactive technology that is physical, so the things like the goggles that you're mentioning, the Microsoft
Microsoft Lens.
On building sites, are there some technologies there where we are starting to see some machines take over the construction process or the identification process of materials? How is that starting to evolve either in Australia or overseas?
So I know that here in Brisbane, the Urban Arts Project or UAP, they work with Follogram as well in terms of scanning these panels and bringing them together. But also we are stepping into the realm of robotics, right? Mm-hmm. So that a machine will actually do these kind of things rather than a tradesperson. I guess depending on what the architecture is and depending on what the project is, there's reasoning in why we would get a robot arm to do things rather than a human being, right? Because there's still a human being controlling the robot arm. But I remember there's this staircase at UTS, so University of Technology in Sydney. Mm-hmm. Is it? Yeah. So in the Geary building, where actually the Urban Arts Project or the UAP in Brisbane, they built the staircase because it has this very unique shape. And for a tradesperson, I think that's, I don't want to say impossible, but it would be a different kind of level in terms of how to get this done with traditional tools and with your hands, when the robot can be more precise in creating this kind of shape, rounded shape in this staircase, because also the material, I believe, comes with some challenges. It's like a shiny metal staircase. So we do have these robots, and I think it's funny, when I went to UAP, they always tell you these robot arms could kill people, and I'm like, okay, that's not really what I want to hear, but it's important that there's this control, or it allows you as a tradesperson or designer or whoever is controlling the robot arm here to have so much more control about what's going to happen with the material and how the end product is actually looking like, right? So that's quite interesting. And there are more projects like this, I believe, where, again, Follogram and UIP are doing lots and lots of things around the world, I believe, where they have these kind of unique shapes, but also going into, I know that Follogram goes into universities and works with students to see if the applications are really working, right? Because you can imagine if I go to a tradesperson, then there's a certain mindset how to do things, because they have been many of the things they have done a million times before, so they know how to do things. So they don't need this visual guidance from my goggles to understand what they need to do next, because they already know, right? So then it can be really hard to adapt to this technologies, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I think it's a very interesting space, especially with the lens that you mentioned, Microsoft Lens and also Apple Vision Pro, that it's becoming more of a consumer-based product. I think there's going to be some products that are coming out very soon where, because that's now on the market, as soon as, you know, iPhones and everyone's smartphones have the ability to have a camera on them and pick up different information that's out there and interact with GPS and everything, there's probably going to be more and more information that people's goggles will pick up over time. Do you think that's also going to cross over into the home or into the office space? And in the work that you do, when you're, I assume you're probably working a lot more on your PC screen, are you seeing some of that workflow actually start to require a lens or goggles to actually experience what you're working on?
In some instances, yes, but it also gets to the point that once you have done things more than once, I think it's then again fine that you will work on the screen, because you can imagine, okay, if I do this, it would have this kind of impact, right? So there are also other applications where they start to really model things in the VR space, right? So you see some artists using virtual reality headsets, creating artwork and then zooming in, zooming out, creating some details in their model. And they're not creating architecture, they're creating artwork, right? And this, the issue at the moment with virtual reality headset, it's not precise enough to allow me to do like millimeters yet, right? So maybe with the Microsoft Lens, there's a possibility to do that, right? But I've been using the Oculus Quest for some time, and then Oculus S Quest. I don't remember all the different models, but so it's very playful, right? And because it's not precise enough at the moment, it doesn't allow me to create like an architecture model within my VR headset. And also using Twinmotion, there are things I can manipulate in my VR headset. So if I want to change the material of something, if I want to jump around my or teleport around my 3D model, changing the weather, these kind of things I am able to control at the moment. But I don't think you can move around objects yet. And it's also tricky because I think it's just the headset that I have my two remotes, and the remotes do not allow me to be precise enough to place things where I actually want them, if it's important for me, being in a certain range of tolerances, right? So it goes back to the I want to call it VR fatigue, right? So if you wear the headset for quite some time, it will have some impact on how you perceive things, because simply quite heavy, right? After half an hour, it will have an impact on your head, and on a computer, you will also be impacted after a while, because your eye is going to be not happy of looking at the screen for 8 hours. But I guess having this extra weight on your head is not beneficial. And so they need to be lighter as well to work with them for quite some time. Because at the moment, I think many people or studios are still using it as an add-on, but design decisions are less likely to be made based on the experience I have. Not saying not at all. There will be companies who will do that already. But for smaller companies, I would think that it's more like a gimmick I can show to my client, this is how it's going to be looking like. Something.
Yeah, I've seen that for sure in different firms where they'll invite a client in and give them a VR headset, and then they can walk around their new home or the new office and can be rendered relatively well, so that then they can see what the outcome should look like. And then I guess, it's still almost the realm of movies, I guess, where architects are coming to work and standing in a VR room where then they can sort of almost build their buildings in VR and not be required to sit in front of a computer doing all of the design and modeling. But maybe I wonder if that's something that might come through the pipes in the future. Yeah, so I guess in terms of the immersive side of this technology, where do you think we're sitting at the moment between what you're able to produce for the game space and the Epic Game beta testing that you're doing, and what's currently working and what people are, I guess, are sort of starting to explore in architecture. Where do you think these two realms are going to collide? Where are sort of, I guess, game design technologies going to start to influence architecture?
In terms of facades and shapes, right? I mean, that's probably going away a little bit from game design, but going more into parametric design, where things are based on relationships, right? And then stepping into game design, what do you see in the movie industry right now is for some of the science fiction movies, they do reality capture scans, right? And they implement real spaces and places into their movies, but then they're also recording things on a green screen and then they place the actors somewhere, right? So they're using a lot of, I think GTI it's called, right? In English. So then I think what we're seeing these things happening in movies, right, and in the game industry will help architects and studios and designers to understand that there's a big potential in doing similar things because the technology is there and it's used by others for other purposes or other intentions. But there will be potentials to do that in architecture as well. So you mentioned that clients are looking at their potential homes through a VR headset, right? Mm-hmm. And to have an understanding through how the end product might look like. I think there's an issue here because usually the end product will not look like 100% as the experience I've created or my rendering. And that's not a new problem, right? My photorealistic rendering doesn't look like the real one because maybe the timber floor has a slightly different color, all these kind of things. Somebody messed it up in terms of where the light switch are, these kind of things. Mm. So then the client will be unhappy, right? So because he doesn't get what he wanted to have. So there's still a real benefit in making abstract experiences and making abstract renderings. So rather than having this photorealistic output, giving somebody an understanding of how this looked like to give them, allow them to have some kind of fantasy in what the space ended up being, right? Because there's things I can really greatly communicate with a white model, right? And go through a white model without any type kind of materials and allows me to experience the space very, very differently. But also I understand the space. But if I go with a white model to a client and then I show him the end product with the real materials, I mean, once the building is finished, I do not believe that my client will be upset that it's not a white building, right, or design, because he would understand in the first place that this is just a draft or a design process, right? So I think that's quite important that we are not losing this communication, because being more abstract allows me to focus on certain aspects. And also in a VR headset, what I find quite interesting is I can switch off and on different kind of layers, right? So if I don't want to see furniture, I can switch it off, right? If I want to see space in a different lighting, right, changing the light arrangement, I can quickly do that and then make decisions based on that in my 3D model. So that's quite interesting. And then I do not have any kind of other aspects which are disturbing my analysis of whatever I'm analyzing at the moment.
It's a fascinating space. Yeah, and I just can't even fathom how far things are going to be pushed, I think, by learning from one industry coming into the other. So I'm really looking forward to seeing just how far that's going to go. Well, Valdemar, thank you so much for joining me today on the Hearing Architecture Podcast and for talking to us so much more about what's happening in the interactive space, the technology space, and all of the different software that people can explore. I mean, everything that's happening in AI as well. I think there are more and more firms who are exploring that and having a lot of fun with it. So, yeah, thank you so much for clarifying some of what's happening at the moment in that world. And, look forward to hearing more about what you produce in the near future.
Thanks for having me, Daniel.
This has been Hearing Architecture, proudly sponsored by Brickworks. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much to our guest, who isn't a registered architect, but an academic expert in advanced architectural technology at QUT, Dr. Voldemir Janik. We can't wait to see what you do in the future. Our sponsor Brickworks also produce architecture podcasts hosted by Tim Ross. You can find The Art of Living, Architects Abroad, and The Power of Two at brickworks.com.au or your favourite podcast platform. If you'd like to show your support, please rate, review, and subscribe to Hearing Architecture in your favourite podcast app. If you want to know more about the Australian Institute of Architects is doing to support architects and the community, please visit architecture.com.au. This is a production by the Australian Institute of Architects Emerging Architects and Graduates Network in collaboration with Open Creative Studio. The Institute production team was Madeline Jenkins and Claudia McCarthy, and the Imagine production team was Daniel Moore. This content is brought to you by the Australian Institute of Architects Emerging Architects and Graduates Network in collaboration with Open Creative Studio. This content does not take into account specific circumstances and should not be relied on in that way. This content does not constitute legal, financial, insurance, or other types of advice. You should seek independent verification or advice before relying on this content in circumstances where loss or damage may result. The Institute endeavours to publish content that is accurate at the time it is published, but does not accept responsibility for content that may or will become inaccurate over time.